Our next guest is going to tell us all about something I must confess, until this morning, I'd never even heard of. Fascinating this is, trypophobia. And we are going to talk about this with a man who certainly knows his stuff, who wrote a paper on this, one of the first ones, actually, Jeff Cole, who joins us now. Morning, Jeff.
Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Very good. Tell us a bit about yourself. Surely you haven't devoted your entire life to studying closely packed holes.
No, I haven't. I'm an academic, and my field is a human visual system, and I work at the Centre for Brain Science at the University of Essex, which is in the southeast of England, near Colchester.
Right.
So my thing is the visual system, and when I moved to the Centre for Brain Science about 10 years ago, that's when I started to do some research on trypophobia, yeah.
Amazing. We were just discussing off-air there whether it's trypo or tripo, but both apparently is okay, is it?
Yeah, some people say try, some people say trip. Trypophobia is the one I say, and I think that's a common one, yeah.
Fair enough. Now, obviously, as I just alluded to there, it's all about holes, and it's not just any old hole. It's not like the potholes in English roads, which most people are afraid of, to be fair. This is all about small holes and clusters of them.
Yes. Well, it can be any holes as long as they fit a certain criteria, which is they need to be sort of at arm's length, round about 5, 6, 7 millimetres in size.
Right.
Sort of, you know, 10 or 15 maybe a bit less than that, but that kind of thing. So we're not talking about big holes you can fall into. The classic example are things like the holes in crumpets, or perhaps the number one trypophobic stimulus is the lotus seed pod. Now, this is a flower head, and what's interesting about this is that it's a flower. It should be nice to look at.
Yeah.
But for many people, it's pretty disgusting and repulsive to look at. So, and that's got the classic feature. It's just an arrangement of holes. Yeah,
yeah.
LAT chocolate is another example, or the brake lights on a Peugeot 307. So it's not any particular kind of stimulus. It can be anything as long as they're a collection of clusters of holes. Yeah.
Wow, the brake lights on a Peugeot 307 wasn't one I was expecting you to throw in there.
No.
I mentioned this morning. We've had a few people telling us about people they know who've got this. Somebody said they can't bear to look at peacock feathers or Islamic patterns on architecture.
Right, well, architecture is another classic example, really, because, you know, I think it's worth saying, even though trypophobia does sound a bit strange and somewhat odd, the scientific context of it is very well established. So we've known for a long time, haven't we, that just looking at certain things can have health implications.
Yeah.
You know, the best example people are aware of is photosensitive epilepsy. But another example close to trypophobia is a pattern-induced migraine. So just looking at certain patterns, like stripy patterns, can induce migraine. And it's the same with trypophobia. It induces an aversion, so it sounds strange, but that's the context of it, really. So if somebody is trypophobic, you know, it's actually very common, and it's not like anything to worry about as such. You know, it's very common, and any stimulus will induce it, really, yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned these kind of things which are more common than we think they are. I didn't discover until I actually suffered it myself that I had something called supermarket syndrome, where if I go into a certain supermarket, I always end up feeling kind of dizzy, and it turns out it's a real thing.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know about that phenomenon, but what I do know is places like supermarkets and hospitals, I mean, perhaps hospitals for another reason, more obvious reason, but places where it's open space and the lights... The lights can be... Well, it's a kind of, you know, it's a photosensitive sort of a phenomenon, isn't there?
And it was something, I think, also to do with the fact that there were lines of shelves that were going off into the distance, which made it worse. Very odd, very strange.
Yeah, well, that's the same context as trypophobia. It's a visual stimulus. It's a pattern. It's an unnatural pattern, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, human-made and designers are beginning to think about when they're designing products, to think about the actual, you know, the construction of the patterns to make sure they're not stripy, they're not trypophobic. And what happens to me, Bill, is like once every kind of year or so, a journalist will phone me up and say something like, have you seen the new, have you seen, well, whatever it is, the new iPhone, the new Nokia?
Right, right.
You know, it's a bit trypophobic, isn't it? And I'll kind of go on to the net, have a look, and I'll say, yeah, it is a bit, yeah.
How funny. And one in five people, I think, is the number that have severe trypophobia. And that's actually extraordinary because it's double the estimated amount of people who have claustrophobia, which, of course, we all know about.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, a couple of important things, really. I'm pretty sure trypophobia, like lots of psychological phenomena, is a matter of degree, and we all are sensitive.
Right.
You know, it's a bit like, I mean, we all know the classic example, perhaps, of something like autism being on a spectrum, where, or even like madness. The idea being that we're all a little bit that way inclined. It's just a matter of degree. Mm. And when you get over a certain threshold, a clinician would describe you as having a certain condition. And I think that's the same for trypophobia. I think we're all a little bit sensitive. So, for example, the lotus seed pod, even somebody who's not really trypophobic, they're not bothered by the images. When you show them to the lotus seed pod to a person, they can often appreciate that's a little bit weird, that is, you know. That's something not right about that. So it's a matter of degree, really. But in terms of severe trypophobia, yeah, it's about, well, okay, one in seven or eight, really.
Right.
You only have to read some of the testimonials that people give on places like trypophobia.com. People say things like, I saw a bad image this morning and I couldn't work. You know,
whoa.
I can't drive because of I see too many light diodes in traffic lights and things like that. So
goodness,
it can be quite debilitating
me.
To some people.
I'm very impressed that there is a trypophobia.com. Presumably they can't post images of trypophobic things because people wouldn't be able to read the website.
No, well, that's an absolute no-no. If you go on there and you put a link to an image, the users will not be pleased at all.
How extraordinary. Now, you know your stuff, as I mentioned, because you published, along with Professor Arnold Wilkins back in 2013, the first scientific paper on this topic. So quite recently, to be fair.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, you know why it was quite recently, really. It's because of the rise of the internet. Before the internet, people, it's like anything, isn't there? You know, people didn't really meet up with other people. They would have had this condition and just kind of brushed it off.
Yes.
And thought, oh, this is a bit weird. I won't tell anybody because I might be getting a bit mad, you know. But then with the rise of the internet, you know, people talk to each other and then realise, actually, this is pretty common. And so, yeah, again, over 10 years ago, I decided to sort of write the first scientific paper on this, and I've done a few more, you know, and lots of people have now. There's groups in the Far East who are interested in this phenomenon. So, yeah, scientists are really doing stuff on it now, yeah.
And so, of course, the $64,000 question, what did you discover as to what the potential cause of this could be? Does it have any kind of evolutionary reason for existing?
Well, there's four basic theories. One is the first one I put forward. I mean, who knows? But I put forward a theory which says that we don't like the images because they are reminiscent of the patterns on poisonous animals.
Oh.
Okay? Because what it is, don't want to get technical, Bill, but basically we did a mathematical analysis of trypophobic images and found they've got a unique visual structure, a mathematical structure. And it's a structure you don't see in the natural world apart from on poisonous animals. You know the warning colours you get on the poison dart frog?
Yep.
They've got the same mathematical structure. So I thought maybe what's happening is when a person sees a trypophobic image, there's an ancient part of their brain telling them, oh, be careful. That image, I've done the mathematical analysis, and that image there could be a poisonous animal. Of course, there's another part of your brain saying, no, it's not, it's a lotus seed pod, it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's the other part of the brain trying to warn you. So that's the theory we put forward at first.
Okay.
Another theory is kind of another evolutionary one, which says that it's warning us of pathogens and because the holes are quite reminiscent of lots of skin pathologies.
Right.
You know, when you've got some kind of skin disease, often it presents itself as clusters of holes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, I mean, it's all hand waving, who knows, that's another theory.
I like the expression hand waving, I like that.
Yeah, well, it's a scientific expression, actually, Bill.
Is it really?
It really is. It's a scientific expression, you know, it's a kind of a common thing we say. Mm-hmm. And it kind of means, look, we don't know, but we have to try and come up with ideas.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay to come up with ideas which are wrong, because other people then test them. So, yeah, it's a bit of hand waving. Mm-hmm. Evolutionary thing is another interesting theory, and I'll tell you this one because it's totally wrong.
Okay.
And it does annoy me when I see it on the internet. It's the one that says that trypophobia doesn't really exist. It's just a particularly successful internet meme.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
So the idea is that there's, you know, a person didn't really never had it, but then they've seen these images going around the internet and they've thought to themselves, oh, okay,
yeah,
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
They think about it and then eventually, you know, they've got this condition, you know.
Mm.
And I don't like that because that is, I tell you that because it's totally wrong. And the reason
right.
I know it's wrong is simply because there's lots of people with trypophobia who had it and will tell you they had it years before the internet was in existence.
Right.
So it can't be that.
And presumably as well, you have, in your kind of neuroscience, you've measured the brains of people, I guess, with infrared spectroscopy and MRIs and stuff.
That's right, absolutely right, because we wanted to sort of test the fourth theory. So I've just told you the three theories. There's a fourth one, and this is my favourite one. And it's not really an explanation. It's just a kind of... Well, what it says is that trypophobia and trypophobic images, they're a visual equivalent of a horrible loud noise. Now, the fact is, we don't know why, but the simple fact is there are certain horrible noises, like, you know, the classic example of fingernails on the blackboard.
My next-door neighbour, in fact. Yes, absolutely, right. Yes.
Okay. And there's just some noises which are just horrible to listen to. And what happens at the brain level is you get these neural spikes. So the neurons, they fire, and they sometimes they spike, and for whatever reason, the brain just doesn't like this. And when you get a spike in neural activity, it equates to feeling a bit uncomfortable and not liking something,
yeah,
like a horrible noise.
Yeah.
And that is just what's happening with trypophobia. Okay, and the reason we know that is that I did some functional near infrared spectroscopy, which measures blood flow in the brain, and we found that the spikes, okay, the activity is right, particularly right at the back of the brain, okay,
mm-hmm,
and that is where the visual, the primary visual cortex is.
Yes.
Okay, it's the visual part of the brain. So that's kind of telling us that most activity is in the visual area, and it's a visual phenomenon. You know,
okay,
something about the visual part of the brain is not liking this.
Yes,
okay.
I see.
So that's my sort of, that's my theory, really. There's not much to it, really. It's just the visual equivalent of a loud noise, and we just don't like it.
And what about how bad can it get for some? What are the kind of horrible symptoms of somebody who's got it quite badly, and can those symptoms be alleviated in any way?
Well, the symptoms tend to be things like feeling a bit sick, feeling nauseous, feeling sick, goosebumps,
mm-hmm,
palpitations, you know, and just this real feeling of being unsettled,
right,
that kind of thing, you know. And as for, well, as for what to do about it, as for a cure, Now, I'm not a clinician or a psychotherapist. I'm a visual scientist, but yeah. I do know that the one effective way to solve something like this, and it's controversial, is a kind of desensitization.
Yep.
Okay. And it's where, you know, essentially you face your fears.
Right.
You know, you've got
yes.
a stimulus which you don't like, whether it's spiders or, you know, or whatever, and you kind of force yourself, or maybe a therapist perhaps, you know, for you to kind of interact with the thing you don't like a lot. Eventually, I mean, it won't be in all cases, you know, but eventually you just become desensitized.
Oh, yes.
And it just no longer bothers you as much as it did do. In fact, this is what happened to me, actually.
Because, right.
The reason why I knew about it is because, you know, when I was small, I was aware that I didn't like clusters of holes,
right.
you know. And then, just by coincidence, I became a vision scientist, and I never thought about
wow.
it. And at first, when I started investigating and doing research on trypophobia, of course, I found it very difficult because I was analysing images and, you know,
yeah.
and all the rest of it. But having been involved with it for so long and seen so many images, it no longer elicits the same kind of response that it used to do. I still don't like the images.
Yep.
But it's not like it used to be where you would feel really quite sick, you know. So, yeah, desensitization. That,
yes.
That's one thing that does work with this kind of thing.
Extraordinary. Yeah. Absolutely extraordinary. Well, I'm sure that many people now listening are probably thinking, crikey, I had no idea that what I have has actually got a name and it's a thing. So thank you for coming on and telling us about it. I guess the worst job in the world would be somebody who worked in a crumpet factory and their company car was a Peugeot 307. That would be a disaster, wouldn't it?
That's right, with lotus seed pods growing in their garden.
Wow. Thank you so much. What an interesting piece of research that is. Thank you for coming on and telling us about it.
You're very welcome, Bill.
All right, Jeff, you take care of yourself. All the best.
You too.
Bye-bye.